comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Nerds United. That's right, you get two in the month of February after going 2 months without a new show, because that's how inspiration has struck me this month. And in episode 73, we're getting back to the core of Nerds United. And I'm so thankful and appreciative that the creative force behind West of Oz is joining me on episode 73, and we're going to learn all about them. Sean Benner, the writer, Nick Winnen, who did the art, and Kat Luong, who provided the color. And we'll talk about West of Oz, but we got to get to the origin of the origin story, and that would be from a three-time guest on Nerds United, J. Peter Onitz. As you know, he provided the art, did all the artwork for the probably world, at least as far as I know, world's only comic book done on a deck of playing cards. And actually, four or five issues, four or five decks of cards. Make sure that you find them. I wish I had a link handy. We'll have it on the post, but make sure you check that out. But you may not know, or maybe you would if you remember those episodes with Jay, that he is also an instructor at the, help me out, somebody, where he...
Art Institute of Colorado.
Thank you.
There you go.
Art Institute of Colorado. And he, and I know this, obviously, from talking with Jay, but also because from time to time on Facebook, Jay will share an art-related link, and it will say, for me and my students. And I'm so happy that in episode 73, I get to visit with some of those students, because I tend to comment on it and I say, you know, make snarky, sarcastic posts on comments on his posts as you would expect me to do. And I say, if it's for your students, you know, keep it in the classroom, man. Welcome to episode 73. Welcome to Nerds United, Sean, Nick, and
thanks
Kat. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity to come in and talk about our comic. I think a big thing about Jay is he can't keep anything in the classroom, or we wouldn't have this comic right now.
Which is good. So let's start at your beginnings. And Sean, we'll start with you. What kind of spurred your interest? Have you been a comics fan your whole life, or was it something that you picked up and got more interest in as you went on?
Absolutely. So I grew up in rural Maine.
Maine.
Rural, yeah, Maine.
Okay, so this might be a first. I don't think we've talked to any Mainanites here on Nerds United just yet.
They call themselves Maniacs.
Really? Okay, so you learned something now.
Right. But yeah, so I had a real sort of isolated rural upbringing. So I never had much exposure to pop culture. But I had an uncle who was also my father. What is it? Godfather?
Yes.
Is that what it's called? Yeah.
Uncle, so who's also your father, that's not really a Maine thing from my understanding. It's like an Arkansas thing. So.
Well, it's a good thing, I think, but not a Maine thing for sure. My godfather would always send me comics, and he was really a collector, and that was my only exposure for a long time. But he would send me things my mother wouldn't let me read. Like when I'm about, you know, six or seven, he's sending me The Killing Joke and Ronin. And The Dark Knight Returns. Like what he sees is the classics that I need to read to become a comic fan.
What your mom thought was you didn't need to read them for another 10 years.
Right, exactly. She said, there are swear words in this comic book.
did she try to filter them and you know, keep them away from you until you were what she thought was the appropriate age?
Yeah, I think about 10. So I got Justice League. I got that. That made it through. The late 80s Justice League and some of the late 80s Claremont, X-Men Claremont, that made it through. But until I was about 10 or 11, I didn't get the... But then she said, there's no nudity, so I'm okay. You've heard all the words at 11.
I can see that, you know. Well, yeah, I guess for scope, we'll go, you know, all three of you, Sean, Kat, and Nick, ages, so we know. I mean, because if you're... what year were you 10, you know? So just so we have an idea.
So I was born in 1978 in December.
Okay.
Nick, you wanna? How old are you there? 157.
Do I really have to say?
No, you don't have to. But
his, by the way, his Skype photo shows him as a 60s Asian man with a pistol and a silencer. So that's.
I was born in 1986 in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, what part?
Right outside Pittsburgh, a place called Monroeville.
So I'll deviate from the conversation as we'll do throughout the time. Sports fan, Pittsburgh sports fan.
Yeah, naturally being from there, right down the street from Pittsburgh, I was like everything was Penguins, Steelers, and you know Pirates. So
okay, so far Nick is my favorite because I'm also a Steelers fan.
All right,
I'm a fan of Pirates in general.
Fair enough. So you would be a Pittsburgh Pirates fan and a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan.
I lived in Florida for a long time, and the Bucks were the only team to cheer for.
All right. And Kat?
Yeah. Well, I'm a Colorado native, and I'm the youngest out of everyone because I was born in 1996.
96?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know. You do have to say it again. 96.
I'm just thinking how many clothes I have that are older than Kat. No, I'm kidding. All right. Well, yeah. So that's all. Because so this project and this course. I mean, a lot of people think, you know, and this is something that I had to realize when I got into college, way back when 2000. But I was unfamiliar with the term non-traditional student because, you know, K through 12, everybody's the age they're supposed to be. So what's nice about the Art Institute of Colorado or higher learning in general is you can break away from, you know, going from senior year to college. So it's really great that we have, and I say this with all due respect, Sean, but we have, you know, you're in three different decades in age, and you all came together to put this one project together. So it's amazing. It's what the arts can do. It can bring people together.
It's very true.
And I think that the school environment really is a place you can find other people that share that interest and have not just share it passively, but have expressed an interest in pursuing it enough to go to the school, you know?
Which I think, you know, you can owe or credit single-handedly to Jay, probably.
I think for us, Jay is an evolution because he is an up-and-coming teacher that's helped us while we were there. When Nick and I started, Jay had he was a part-time teacher, and now he runs our curriculum. He runs our department. Yeah, he's really got himself to be appreciated for how talented and valuable he is to the program, and I got promoted for it.
So, Sean, we spent a little bit of time talking about you and your history as a maniac. the natural course of the conversation is going to go what eventually got you all out to Colorado. But before we get there, Nick, you mentioned, you know, Pittsburgh area. So obviously we got off on a tangent. But you know, what was your introduction to the medium of comics or perhaps even the pop culture genre, the superhero genre?
I think to be honest with you, I was never really interested in comics at all. Through my childhood, I was more interested in other things that didn't relate to comics at all. And I was always doing outdoor activities. I thought reading comics was just not for me, and I didn't like, you know, picking them up and looking at them. I thought superheroes were cool, but I'd rather be out there being a superhero, you know, kicking doors in. That's why I joined the military. Until I got to the Art Institute, and that's when to be honest, Jay is the real reason I actually thought maybe I could do comics, maybe I could draw these linear stories. And because otherwise, had I not met him, I probably wouldn't have been interested in comics at all.
Well, before we go any further, Nick, thank you for your service. What years did you serve?
I was in the United States Navy from 2000 12.
And where Navy especially, but I mean especially in the geopolitical global climate that we've had the last 15 years, not to say there's no safe place, but I mean it seems like you enlist in the military, there's a chance you're going to see the world. So what all, you know, lands did you have the opportunity to see while you served?
I was attached to a expeditionary force in the Navy, which means that if you're in the regular Navy, you're going to be on a ship going from port to port, you know, country to country, like the Mediterranean or, you know, Spain or something. But the old phrase,
any port in a storm.
Yeah, right.
Like pirates, right?
Right. But I was attached to a expeditionary force, meaning that we were boots on ground. So we were more like soldiers in the Army than we were sailors. And it was a small boat unit called Riverine Squadron 1, which is it was disbanded and changed. It's not around anymore. But I was sent to Iraq, and Basra, in the southern part of Iraq, and I was there for 6 months doing operations with Riverine Squadron 1. Then I also went to Bahrain for a number of months to do certain activities there as well.
You say expeditionary force. And for whatever reason, as soon as you said that, I'm like, oh, cool, he got to go see Antarctica. I don't know why. It just seems like, you know, like you'd be out on an expedition exploring, you know, like whatever frontier is left in. I don't know if there's any frontier left in the world to be explored, but it seems like that would be, you know, that's where, well, you said expeditionary force.
Well, it's funny you say that. There actually is a command that you can actually go to in the Navy where it's Antarctica, and it's called the Deep Freeze Ribbon. You get this little ribbon put on your uniform. Any time in Antarctica, so that does exist.
That's awesome.
But are there many volunteers for that?
No, you can get punished by going there. It's kind of a punishment. Yeah.
I would imagine the only people who wanted that detail were, you know, like Native Alaskans. And I don't mean like Native, like, you know, the traditional sense of Native, but you know, people,
right?
But people who are used to extremely cold conditions. That, because I'm in Illinois, and we have had 50 to 70 degree weather this past week, and it's been great. But I also know that when it gets below 40, I get real bitchy. So Antarctica is not the vacation destination for me.
Well, Illinois is where I did all my training at. I was in Great Lakes for 6 months in boot camp, and then I went out from there. But I know what Illinois is like for sure. It's miserable sometimes.
Well, very much so, but for a lot of different reasons. Kat, let's go on to you now as the youngest of the bunch, and I say that with all the respect and excitement, but born in 96, so you have really... See, because for me, I was born in 82, so it wasn't really cool for me to express my nerddom, you know, growing up in school, because, you know, you walk around with a Spider-Man emblem on your shirt, nobody's going to respect that. You know, they're all going to, you know, punch you. So you've grown up in a different time where being a nerd or being a geek is quite fashionable and popular. So,
yeah.
You know, and being a woman as well, and I can only say this based purely on assumption because I'm not a woman, but there are some. And I know that there's, you know, like Gamergate and things like that. And I'm not trying to make this a political conversation, obviously, but there is like admiration for women who also, you know, enjoy the nerdy lifestyle.
Yeah, I'm actually really glad that, you know, like more women are being recognized in, you know, like the comic industry. And honestly, it doesn't really feel any different being a woman. Really, it's just, you know, it's just a thing you like, and
sure,
it doesn't really matter, like, what gender you are. And plus, like, I think it's really cool how being a nerd right now is practically being, like, celebrated now. thanks to Hot Topic, that my generation is just, like, really way more into, you know, pop culture and, like, comics and all that stuff.
That is also a first on Nerds United.
Which is super important.
As you say, that might be the first time that Hot Topic was ever actually thanked on Nerds United. but so Kat, tell us, Sean and Nick know probably, but tell the listeners, you know, what got you started in, you know, your nerddom?
Oh, well, I've always been kind of a nerd, but it was just like a different genre nerd. I wasn't a comic book fan actually until I joined our comic book club at the art institutes because like all my friends were there and I just wanted to hang out with them, and that's when like I got really into, just being around the whole culture and like finding out how to make comics thanks to Jay and taking his classes, and it was just really fun,
Peer pressure at its best.
Yeah, gentle peer pressure.
It can be used as a force for good. So all of you have different backgrounds, but coming together and again meeting at the Art Institute of Colorado, which is, if I remember previous conversations with Jay correctly, that is located in Denver.
Yes.
So what got you all to Colorado then? What that's the next step in the journey.
Well, I was born here,
Oh, okay.
so.
You're a local.
Yeah. She just hasn't escaped yet.
I will tell you, because I have lived in a few states, I've seen some things and I've done some stuff, that there is more to the world out there. So make sure you do some
Thank you.
traveling.
Your girl hasn't left Colorado in like 13 years now. I need a vacation, honestly.
Well, after West of Oz takes off, and then you'll be able to go wherever you want.
Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Sean, what landed you in Colorado, sir?
So I moved here. I'm actually a veteran, an army veteran as well, and
Thank you as well for your service, sir.
thing. And I moved here after I got out because my wife and I were looking for a place to go to school, and I was going to go to UC Boulder for to get a master's in linguistics.
Ah,
Right.
home of the
As
Buffaloes.
interesting, right? As interesting as that sounds.
You know what though?
But
It does, because there obviously, and I know it's more than just, learning a language, but picking up on dialects. But think of the careers that are out there. Let's say in this genre. I mean, in the Star Trek, realm, the Klingon is
sure,
you
yeah.
can change your Facebook language to Klingon if you wanted to. But Star Wars, there are all these different, dialects and things like that, or Game of Thrones, so linguistics is I don't know if it's fashionable, but it certainly has its place in this, world of fandom.
I think so. And I think that understanding that language at sort of a core level, like how to use the words, even can help in it helps me anyway in writing more concisely instead of sort of carrying on longer than you have to.
There's something that I or we were told in radio school, broadcast school, is that brevity is the soul of wit. And in 10 and a half years in radio and 3 years in sales, I have yet to learn that. So
Well, for me, brevity means I get to see more of Nick's art and more of Kat's color. So the less words, the better in that aspect.
the anti-Kevin Smith.
Absolutely. That's how I feel. Yeah.
But
Or anti, Scott Snyder.
And those are two writers that I'm a big fan of. So that was not, said
Oh,
disparagingly, but
sure. I could never aspire to hit Scott Snyder's heights in my whole existence. So to you, sir.
I say, you know what I say? I say aspire, reach.
Right. Yeah, that's the shot. So after I came here, my wife convinced me very quickly that linguistics was going to be boring and I would hate it. And I should do something I enjoyed. Like, so she sort of pushed me into going to the Art Institute for art instead of the ho-hum of a master's in linguistics.
And does your wife get points? Was it a decision well made, or advice well
Oh,
listened to?
absolutely. I have a friend who got out at the same time and I, who was in my unit. He's now one of my neighbors and still my friend. And he went the linguistic route and he's not loving it.
So Sean, we know how you ended up in Colorado. Kat, obviously we know how you ended up there because you started there. Nick, how did you land in Colorado, sir?
I came out when I was 11, so that was like 97. And I think it was mainly because my parents just wanted new job opportunities at the time, because taxes were high in Pennsylvania, so they just said, let's go somewhere where the taxes are lower, we can get better job prospects. And I already had family out here. My aunt and my cousins were here, so we just kind of said, hey, just come live out here with us, and they helped us get started, so.
wonderful. If there's one thing I've learned is when you're starting over, it helps to know somebody, you know, where you're starting. So,
for sure.
But, yeah, cause you know, and this is for the listeners as much for you guys, but my wife and I, we were considering relocation, last summer and looked at like Omaha, you know, and I know some people out in Omaha, but at the same time it's, oh man, now we got a little boy. I was the one who kind of dragged my feet and said, let's stay home because grandparents are here, aunts and uncles, cousins, all that stuff. So that was me. Yeah. I shouldered that one. So, so awesome. So we know how you all got to Colorado. We know about the Art Institute of Colorado and the bevy of knowledge and wisdom that J. Peter Onnes has bestowed upon you. So let's talk about West of Oz and the Art Institute of Colorado. I think of it more visually, but Sean, as the writer, how did that, you know, lend you to be able to, you know, express yourself in the written form with the story?
Absolutely. So I took a summer. That was my summer of decision, and I spent that whole time practicing writing because I figured if I was going to go into linguistics, I had got out of high school 13 years before that, and I had never gone to school since then, except for to learn foreign languages or shoot a gun, right? Mm-hmm. So for me,
I can see how they could both have their advantages. Yeah.
Right, yeah. And their place in the office. Right?
well, I'm Nerds United and his parent company Jittery Monkey Podcast do not condone workplace violence.
time code. So for me, when I decided to go for art, I knew it was going to be learning how to write better, more as much as learning how to draw again, since I hadn't drawn in 13 years either. It was as much that learning to write again to prepare for school as it was to draw again.
And then,
so I think for me, then that was just a lot of reading comics, right?
and that's when the, I mean, like, because I know you said, you know, things like Killing Joke, Ronin, and Dark Knight were things that you were reading at a young age. What was the stuff that you picked up when you were trying to prepare yourself more for, you know, this, I don't want to call it a hobby, but, you know, this next step?
Yeah, I know what you mean, for sure. There's some classics that I call classics. I mean, they've only been around for, you know, not that long. But to me, right now, Saga has been for a couple of years and is still a go-to book for strong narrative with a unique art style and a good story flowing through the whole book over a series, you know? So I read that book to book, or I read that whole series. Really, what Kirkman did with sort of the early Walking Dead, and then sort of finding a way to continue to reboot that story every time there's too many survivors. To me, that's really inspirational writing.
and as a fan of the show, I really miss the fact that, you know, he tends to do away with too many survivors. That, you know. It's a little Game of Thrones esque, you know. It's,
yeah,
the way that kill count is pretty high.
Let's kill everybody that you love. So,
but I feel like that new season finale. I was a lapsed TV show viewer, honestly, because the first book to me is so strong with that ending with Shane being sort of dealt. I don't want to ruin it for anyone who watches the show and not the comic, but the story arc with Shane at the beginning is a lot stronger in ending in the comic, in that end of the first series. So it kind of lapsed after that, but then I watched the new season premiere and I was right back on board. Oh my God.
Yes. Which is a story, you know, in a completely different conversation about how they were going to tone down the violence, which, you know.
Oh my God. After that, how do you, right? I mean, and that establishes a new height of excitement. That how would they rival that again?
I just remember Glenn looking a little bit like guy from Goonies.
Chunk, is it?
No. The Hey You Guys, but for the life of me, I can't. Was it Chunk? No, because Chunk was the Truffle Shuffle kid, wasn't it?
I'm sorry. My God, Chunk is the dance kid. Yeah.
I can't remember that now. Moving on. We could spend all time here talking about the Goonies. That's a show.
Too many old guys on a podcast together.
Now, I know the cat has seen Goonies.
Yes.
Okay, there was some hesitation. I was concerned.
She's been consuming some 80s culture very recently, right, Kat?
Yeah, I just recently watched, movies from Nick's childhood, like Predator, Commando, right. And all those classics, like Terminator. Right. Oh, the one-liners are so cheesy. Oh,
man, nothing will make you feel old than when somebody was born in 1996 says I was watching something from your childhood, and it's like, that was also my childhood. Shit.
I graduated in 1997, for reference, and she was born
the year before.
Yeah.
We're not going to hold that against her, though, because... Nick, did you spend a lot of time, have you always had, like, the proverbial pencil in the hand doing drawing, or was it something that you wanted to kind of begin later in life?
No, I was always had a knack for drawing. My first drawing was I was 2 years old. My mom actually still kept it. She framed it. It's this really crappy little stick man that doesn't look like anything at all. But I've always been interested in art and interested in drawing, and I've always spent time when I had free time drawing characters. That was my thing I like to do, is draw characters and make up stories. And at the time, I didn't realize that comics was a good outlet for what I like to do, but what I wanted to do was just to create people and places and ways of expressing them. And so I was always doing it from a young age.
And how have you seen your style perhaps change or evolve, in the last 30-ish years?
That's a good question.
I know.
I think
it's a deep one.
It's super deep. I think being exposed to people, like later on, Jay's the main reason I got into comics, for real. But before I met him and got interested in comics, I think my style went from, I wanted to be ultra realistic, and I wanted to produce works like, be honest with you, like Frank Frazetta was one of my huge inspirations. Even as a young kid, I kind of knew about him. And I wanted to be ultra realistic like he was. And I realized he was a painter, and I wasn't. I was more of a illustrator and inker and drawer. I kind of deviated from that and looked for something new. And then lo and behold, Bruce Timm came around when I was a kid. And the Batman the Animated Series started up, and all of a sudden how simple his art was and how much expression he had with the action and the characters and the story was so captivating to me that I wanted to emulate him as much as possible. So I really looked into Bruce Timm, and I looked into a few other people who I personally thought were good at simplifying the type of art I wanted to do, so I could produce more of it quicker. And I kind of realized at a young age that I needed to do that in order to really get out all the ideas that were like scrambled and stuck in my head. So Bruce Timm, I think, was the very first person who helped me refine what I was trying to do, and kind of emulated him.
This is a question both for you, Nick, and Sean, but your time in the service, your time in the military, how did that affect your creative process, be it, writing or, Nick, in your case, drawing? What parts of it inspired you, or what parts of it made you think that, it's not something maybe that I want to rehash, relive, experience again?
All right. Sure. Sean, you want to go first?
Yeah, I think for me, the strongest thing the military teaches someone, in my opinion, is how to break a monumental task down into very small tasks that can be easily completed, and then you just check them off the list one by one. And that's how they do everything in the military, at least in the Army, is they break it down into really easy sort of eighth grade level challenges. And then even if it means you have 200 eighth grade level challenges, that's better than getting a degree, a master's degree in physics,
I'm on board with that completely.
Makes things achievable.
I would much rather go eighth grade again than try to achieve a master's in physics. So I'm on board with that logic completely.
And it lets you set goals that make even a big project. Like if you think about, we're going to do a 30-page comic book with 4 to 7 panels per page. So let's just get going real quick and create those 200 plus panels, depending on how many issues you're doing. 600 plus 9 issues, it comes out to, we have planned almost 680 something panels for the whole 9 issue series.
You just got to take it one at a time.
Yeah, that would seem like a monumental task, right? But if you break it up into, you know, page by page and just do one issue at a time, you're like only looking at, oh, I only have to think of 5 panels at a time, or 7, you know, whatever it calls for per page. And right. Then and then you're surprised how fast you've gotten and how far you went.
Right. I think personally for me, from a design standpoint, I wasn't very interested in anything but drawing people, because people were my favorite subject. So when I got in the military and I was forced to be around equipment, machinery, forced to be exposed to other cultures, especially, I think that was a huge thing, is going to all these places and seeing the way other people live and how they go about everyday life, forced me to kind of realize that there's a bigger world in order to portray through the kind of things I wanted to say with my art. And I kind of became interested in drawing vehicles and drawing all my characters changed from average American looking people to people from Turkey or from you know, Japan or Russia or something like that. So I have a lot of characters in my repertoire that are all multinational, multicultural. So it's that changed a lot for me once I saw how big the world was and how interesting it was.
And as I'm looking at the Kickstarter page right now, which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, you know, listening at home or in your car or wherever you might be listening to, Kickstarter is active right now. As we record this, there are 25 days to go. When this episode drops middle of the week, they'll be down to about 22 days, and they're over halfway to their goal. You can help make it in a reality. The goal, a very modest $2,000. They're at $1,166 right now. Make sure you check that, help them out. I will be sharing the Kickstarter link. I'll have the video up on the Nerds United Facebook page and Twitter, so you can check those out. But when you look at the art, Nick, as you were saying, your early focus was very much, you know, figure and person related. These are some really stunning, like, landscape pieces. And as much of the credit for the art also goes to the color that Kat gave it, because, I mean, it's, you look at it and it looks like that, you know, that classic farm setting with the big red barn and the silo, the blue skies. I mean, everything is, when you look back at that era, you know, the Wizard of Oz era of, you know, I would still consider kind of Depression era probably.
Right. Yeah.
But you know, when you kind of picture that in your mind, this is what you see. So credit to you, Nick, obviously, and Sean for getting us there, but Kat with the color just really gave it such a beautiful palette of colors, and it's a visual joy to behold.
For me, Kat taught us stuff about the book we didn't even know. Like, on a regular basis, she tells us things we didn't know about the not only the characters in the world, but even things she adds to it that change how we think about the story.
Yeah, I think a good example is probably when they land in Oz and they meet the Munchkins. Originally, the color was supposed to be, like, very deserty, like beige and just dark tan colors, but I want to try something more colorful because, you know, the world of Oz is way more colorful than just a desert. So I tried out this really nice orange and reddish hue, kind of what's it called? Just the Grand Canyon, you know,
Moab in
color
Utah.
Scheme. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it really, really just like brightened up everything and just like really made everything a lot more fun to look at and just more, I don't know, just more poppy.
Well, let's talk about West of Oz, because obviously the story I think that most people know is the 1939 movie, Judy Garland, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
You know, the musical, which, by the way, beloved. I have a friend, my very best friend. I won't if he was listening, he would know I was talking about him, but I'm not going to drop his name. I don't want to embarrass him, but that's also pretty
There's
big.
There's nothing
if,
wrong with the theater, everyone.
No, but he's the type of guy who you wouldn't expect when you asked him to name one of his favorite movies. You wouldn't expect to hear The Wizard of Oz be listed, but that's the type of appeal I think that this movie had or this story had, and you know, it has had a couple of you know, obviously I had a sequel, which as a kid terrified the crap out of me, Return to Oz, or something about those henchmen on the wheels,
yeah.
That's Firouza Balk, right? She played Dorothy in that.
And still not. I have no. I'm 34 years old. I have no interest in going back and revisiting that nightmare.
For me, that TikTok, he was terrifying in that as well. Oh my god, I said, ooh, that was scary.
See, and I didn't mind TikTok too much. The chicken was weird.
Belinda, the chicken.
But
it's interesting. That movie is a combination of the second and third book, like mushed together to make it sort of more digestible.
and we were talking about that before we went on the air, and I was informed before we started recording, and I was informed that there's, you know, a lot more to the story than what we traditionally think of when we think of The Wizard of Oz.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. I think, but I can't argue. And for me, it was the same way growing up as a kid. That Wizard of Oz was on, I think it was every Thanksgiving. It was on TV even. So everyone's gathered together and no one wants to deal with the children after you eat. I watched that every year I grew up.
Because you were the child that nobody wanted to deal with.
Well, I think we were a large group of children that were unruly.
mm-hmm. Yeah, I tried to pass the buck.
But if you put us in front of Wizard of Oz, we suddenly were quiet instantly because it's so engrossing to no matter what age you are, really, that to the story, even whether it's the movie or so I've seen my younger nephews watching animated versions on things like Netflix and Hulu and now TV. It's on TV as well. And it's really a cross-cultural thing.
And, you know, speaking of crossing culture, and someone mentioned theater earlier, you know, you don't have to look far. You know, Wicked has been wildly popular, and I know it started as a book, which was then transformed, I guess, to the musical. But that's, you know, wildly popular. And then the other big screen prequel, if you will, that started James Franco, Mila Kunis, and others, which Oz Great and Powerful, I believe, was the name of that. And that's my prequel reference point. I admit, sadly, that I have not seen Wicked.
I think those two movies are a great example. So I love the movie. Like I said, I don't have any issue. I understand a screenplay is a different thing from a book, and that's a different thing from a comic. You know, there can't always be 100% representation of every scene or character.
No, completely agree.
Whether it's Marvel or DC or us.
and that's, I mean, like you said, you know, Marvel being one where we'll go back to not quite a year ago, Civil War. I mean, you just can't encapsulate that much story in a 2-hour, you know, chunk of time. That's why, and I mentioned this in the last episode, that's why video games have failed to really successfully, you know, transfer over to movies because, I don't know if any of you are gamers.
Oh, for sure. That is my other hobby. In my spare time when I'm not writing comics, I make video games for fun.
make video games for fun, but you know you can spend, and I'm not good at video games, so it always takes me longer. But you can spend 80-100 hours, you know, trying to do a story, and then you know nobody's going to be able to turn that into a 2-hour movie. That's why something like Castlevania makes a lot more sense as a Netflix series. But I digress.
Mentioning that to me, thank God to get some Warren Ellis back on people's mind, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I've just been rereading that Transmetro because it seems politically pertinent. If you've never read Transmetropolitan by Warren Ellis, it basically is the Trump administration so far, and we can only hope that there is a character as helpful as Jerusalem that comes to our assistance.
And Transmetropolitan is not a story that I have read, so...
It's a very good book, and it's for classic Ellis, though, so it's kind of gritty and kind of to the point. It's a good book.
What was it about L. Frank Baum's work that attracted you all to this and this retelling of The Wizard of Oz? Because, as mentioned, it is such a well-known story. What was it about the you know subject material that piqued your interest?
Sure. I think Nick and I, you remember Nick. So Nick and I were in the library talking with one of our film friends, right? About we were talking about how everyone thinks you just need a gritty paintbrush and you just color our childhood, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And so we were saying there must be a right way to do that because it's not being represented because I feel like we feel like we knew the reason it was sometimes hard for Hollywood to represent what we all felt impassioned about in our youth. And that was because it wasn't their youth necessarily. They were reading it real quick to get a draft script out, you know?
So they can make money off our youth.
Right. It's more of a cash in than a passion.
Right.
Oh, nice. That's the writer in you. Or you picked that phrase up from someone else. Cash in from the passion.
The books, I had the illustrated kids' books as a child, which were slightly graphic. But I obviously, that was an issue in my early life most of the time. But they showed things like the woodsman hatching or chopping off wolves' heads and things in those old. It was before you had to coddle your children.
Right, right.
Right.
Darn snowflakes, they ruined it for everybody. Really. So, Kat, it's my understanding you're the, do I want to say lead scholar of all things Oz?
No.
Oh.
Wait, I think I have spent so much time that the obsessive, compulsive person about the culture of Oz, that's me, I guess.
No, yeah. I thought somebody said the cat was kept bringing to light all these little things.
So if you see, I'm not sure if we've displayed it because it's kind of a reveal. So for us,
we don't want to reveal. No spoilers. I try to keep Nerd United a spoiler free show.
It's a visual. So the Munchkins for us, when I wrote them and then when Nick drew them, were sort of a slight nod to some things Lucas, like a little bit Jawa, a little bit Ewok, but then our own take on a small hairy person, right?
They have a little bit of purple in them, if I remember correctly.
See? So we didn't know they did at first. That wasn't something we had ever thought about, and we weren't aware they did. But then once it was showed to us by Brilliant Cat, there was no question they absolutely should be multiple colors. And then suddenly you have something that went from like a dusty cowboy-inspired sort of spaghetti western villagers to something as exciting and colorful and as vibrant as the Muppets, you know?
Muppets, yeah.
So let me ask a touchy question, I guess. Is there an underlying... I don't want to say purpose, but an underlying reason for making them all bright, colorful, diverse, maybe a word. I mean, is that to try to say
so
that is there?
You're not off the mark in the book in general. I think we have been gone to as much length as you can without being dishonest about it to make sure we included anyone in the book who might want to read it, and we didn't sort of push any. We tried to even play with sort of gender stereotypes a lot in the book, having a lead, a Western with a female lead, you know?
Which, why? It brings up, you know, the big question is why the Old West? Why take this, you know, why go from Kansas to Wyoming or Arizona, right? You know, why that setting? For sure. The story.
I think, well, for me, it was a lot about setting. What about you, Nick?
Like, why specifically the Old West theme and the whole entire book?
Yeah.
I think, to be honest, a lot of my upbringing was watching The Quick and the Dead and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly and The Fistful of Dollars. And even though I didn't really fully understand them as a kid, I liked the aesthetic of the Western. But as you read the book, too, as we get further in, you'll realize that even though it's Western, there's a bunch of other design choices we made that weren't necessarily Western. They're kind of all mixed in like a big melting pot. But the main one is Western. Just because I like Western and I like the idea of the high noon standoff and the shootouts and the OK Corral. That was kind of cool. So it's kind of like, to me, with The Wizard of Oz, and especially the movie with Judy Garland, was so contrived and cute and, you know, just, it was almost sickening.
I know.
But to me, it was just kind of gross how everything was so perfect. And I couldn't stand the Lollipop Guild. And it was my chance to kind of make it gritty. I wanted to make it gritty and dark without going overboard. And I think Western is a good way of doing that because there's shootouts and people get killed and there's fights, but it's not overly violent. It's not overly obscene. So it's also very gritty. So that's kind of my reason for picking Western over any other type of like steampunk or any other type of genre.
And Western is a genre, to borrow your word, that was wildly popular from a Hollywood standpoint in its heyday, and then it disappeared like the 80s and the 90s and probably the first half of you know the 2000s didn't have you know many Westerns. Then you get the 310 to Yumas, Django Unchained, things like that that are starting to, you know, we're starting to see sort of a return to the Old West. And this is,
I think, that's part of the cultural, you know, ebb and tide of interest.
Oh,
we
sure.
were really strong for a decade or more. We had the trilogies were Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter, very sort of fantasy based. And then we shifted to superheroes, which seems like it will never end. But trust us, it will. Trust
It'll
us.
Go away eventually.
I It'll really don't think it will.
but then when it does, trust me, Westerns are really relevant again to a lot of people because a lot of people are looking to entertainment for escapism, mm-hmm. and it represents a time that's really impossible for someone Cat's age maybe to imagine. Not only were there not cell phones, but there weren't telephone lines.
Yeah. Right? And moreover on that, like not even trying to predict the future and say, you know, what's going to be liked and if we pick Western, our comic will be more successful, but just the fact that I think whenever I pick something that I like or I enjoy, like I enjoy Westerns. I grew up, like I said, with The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Mm-hmm. And whenever I draw something that I enjoy, the product that comes out at the very end is always better because I'm producing something that I like from the beginning. So if I'm picked Western, it's also because it's going to benefit my art and it's also going to benefit, you know, everyone who's in the project because it's something that is fun to produce. And if we like it, other people like it because there's love in it and we care about it.
For sure.
No.
For me, I think there were two things. Like being in Colorado, this is the Old West. I mean, people who've never been here might not realize it, but you can walk around. There are buildings in downtown Denver that have been here since literal cowboys were walking in there to get a shot of whiskey.
And you're not far from, I mean, first half of the, you know, for 2000s area, you know, there was a wildly popular show called Deadwood. And sure enough, you know, Deadwood, South Dakota still exists. And you know, you can go there and sit in an old saloon type of thing. So that – it definitely makes sense, you know, for – and I'm trying not to stereotype the residents of that area. But they can definitely associate, you know, that Western feel. I used to live in Northwest Nebraska. So I know, you know, about being out on the range and just – hundreds of miles between towns, you know, things like yeah. that, you
Actual
know,
it,
tumbleweeds,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
but, you know, so you, when you get a, you know, pardon the phrase, a city slicker, you know, getting them interested in this. And Sean, you made a good point talking about age and Cat's from a different generation. So Cat, what piqued your interest about this project with its setting in the Old West?
That's a really good question, honestly.
I try to only ask the best.
I was just really interested in their project because, like, this is just a new idea that's practically, like, never heard of. Like, a Western take on something really popular. Plus, it was probably going to be a challenge to, like, color it since I'm more used to pastel color palettes and, you know, really soft, girly colors. So,
this adorable
new... Adorable things. All the cute stuff. No. I haven't seen, obviously, I haven't read, West of Oz issue one, but I've seen some of, like I said, the things on Kickstarter, and really, I think the color choices were the right choices, digging the art from Nick, and I'm excited to see the story. Now, let's talk, because this Kickstarter, again, you're shooting for $2,000, shooting Old West, no pun intended. But this is issue one of nine. So after you get this one funded, and I'm just gonna get your hopes up here. I do have a great track record with people who creators who come on my show and have Kickstarters. A lot of them get funded. So there you go. That's right. So what? As Kickstarter tends to be, it's kind of an all or nothing. You get $2,000 and you get to what is the $2,000 going towards besides obviously distribution of the comic, things like that?
Absolutely. So our first goal is 2,000. So at 2,000, that is mostly paying for the finalized production. So Nick and I worked on the book for a long time and got it as good as we could before we ever started a final production. So this last $2,000 is really to pay the wonderful cat here for color contributions. It will cover the Kickstarter goal rewards, and it will also cover paying Nick for the cover and myself to letter the book. And then the rest of it will all go towards printing as many issues as we need to fulfill, hopefully a lot, and to bring to Denver Comic Con in June this year.
Yes, yeah. Denver, which your mentor, for lack of a better term, Jay Peter Onitz, has always been a big part of. In fact, if I remember correctly, year before last, he created or drew Captain Colorado. So
that's right. Yeah, he also did all the badges. I got myself a Marty McFly badge and a Spider-Man badge. I think
somewhere around here, I don't know if it's a badge, but I mean within arms. Reach. We just moved in August. I say just. It's been 6.5 months, but we're still not fully unpacked. So somewhere within arm's reach is of course, most of Magicians Must Die, but it's also I've also got within arm's reach a TARDIS, a Doctor Who piece, the small piece, postcard size that Jay drew. So
cool.
Yeah, I think mentor is perfect word there because I had gone to Emerald City Comic Con several times. I was stationed right near Seattle, and it was easy to go to.
Emerald City, very nice.
Yeah, I really. And then when I first moved here, I met Jay, and he's like, "I'm going to Emerald City Comic Con in 2 weeks," and I'm like, "So am I." so we went together, and I have never had so much fun or so much even sort of and it's such an informative trip to Comic-Con.
I was gonna say road trip buddies.
Yeah, that was great.
But this being issue one of nine, how much of the traditional Wizard of Oz story do we get in issue one?
Okay, so so the movie is what everyone's familiar with, and that ends at the end of Act 2. They cut out all of Act 3 because it's a movie. People don't like that downward end at the end of their movie. They just want Act 2 credits. so what we did is we took the whole story as a scope and broke it up into nine parts. So issue one will cover all the way to sort of where Dorothy and the Scarecrow team up and head off to the Emerald City together.
So you're going to get to, in let's say, issue 7, 8, 9, the stuff that they didn't want you to see.
Yes, yes.
The erased Oz. So the interesting thing about that, you mentioned that movie, the Wise and Powerful Wizard of Oz.
Oz the Great and Powerful or something like that?
Yeah, that movie. So that kind of restores a little bit of the third act, that Chinatown village and some of those things. It tries to work some of that stuff in again.
Okay. See, I've never actually read the books. I'm just, in this case, it's just one of those Hollywood, you know, had me on this one, and I just never took the time to read those books.
Their version's a great version, but there's just this last chapter where it's not quite so convenient for Dorothy to get home as just to return and say, I've slain the witch, and then to go, good job, go home. There's a whole third act there of her actually having to struggle and earn that trip home.
Interesting.
That we're trying to restore into the story. And that's, like you said, that's covered really in issues 8 and 9.
So they have, as I said before, 25 days is the recording, 22 days after the issue drops on Wednesday. So yeah. Middle of March. So,
that date is actually St. Patrick's Day. So very easy to remember, hopefully. So if it's St. Patrick's Day and you say, I need one last chance, you have all the way until about 10:30 p.m. on St. Patrick's Day itself to contribute if you want to.
I'll
releasing quite a bit of stuff through the $1 or more backer updates, and that a lot of I was just about to send you over some maybe, and that's a lot of the concept art, a lot of the behind the scenes reward production art and stuff that we're still working on is being showcased there as well.
All right, and like you said, St. Patty's Day, but for my listeners, you really probably need to do it by the 16th because I know my listeners and. By about 10 o'clock on St. Patty's morning, they might not be in any shape to be finding.
Hopefully will be our day of celebration as well.
Yes.
We plan ahead for this.
Yes, absolutely. Get your donations in, your backing in to the Kickstarter by March 16th, and everybody can celebrate in style on St. Patty's Day for West of Oz. And again, I'll have the link for you in the description on Facebook. But definitely... I'm a big believer in you know having dreams come true for people. I have a dream someday that I'll have my own business, and that's a few years down the road. But my wife's working on her dream, so everybody gets a dream, and this might just be the start of some budding careers, and I certainly hope it is, and I wish you all three the very best of luck on West of Oz issue 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9.
Very much beyond giving us an opportunity to talk about the comic on your show.
I'm thrilled for West of Oz, writer Sean Benner, artist Nick Winand, and colorist that's Kat Luong. So thank you all three for joining me here on Nerds United, and good luck. And again, check out West of Oz. Just go to Kickstarter.com and search for West of Oz, and you'll see it as the first option. So thanks again to all three of my guests, the creative force behind West of Oz, and pupils of the great J. Peter Onitz. Had to get that in one more time. He actually pays me for all the nice things I say about him. So if you say
a big stickler on getting paid.
That's right. Say a few nice things about him and turn those B's into A's. Yeah. So
I think for us, Jay is the other part of the dream. Like, he's the one that realized we wanted to do it for us. And now everyone who's helping with the Kickstarter are the people who are really making it happen.
Sean, Nick, and Kat, thank you all again for joining me. I know we're recording late on a Sunday, but I appreciate the time that you spent here. This all got thrown together very quickly. We only started talking about it on Friday afternoon, but here we are 2.5 days later, and we have a nice show for the listeners. Again, check out West of Oz. Just go to Kickstarter.com and type in West of Oz, or go to Jittery Monkey, or go to Nerds United on Facebook. We got all your West of Oz coverage, and again, the Kickstarter campaign ends on St. Patty's Day, so get those backings in, those donations that supported by the 16th, and we can all celebrate with a green beer on the 17th. So thanks again to Kat and Nick and Sean, and this has been episode 73 of Nerds United. My dogs are bitching at me to go outside, so everybody have a great week.
Bye.
Yeah, thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.